But first, we here at Beta hope that you're staying safe and well, and we hope that we can give your brain a bit of a break from the anxiety we've all been feeling. They say that laughter is the best medicine, and who are we to argue? So let's kick things off with Alan Zweibel. Alan started his comedy career selling jokes for $7 each to the last of the Borscht Belt comedians. He went on to become one of the original writers of Saturday Night Live, where he helped to create iconic sketches like John Belushi's Samurai Deli and Gilda Radner's Roseanne Rosanna Dana. Later, he joined forces with Gary Shandling to create the most deconstructive sitcom ever, It's Gary Shandling Show. Alan's memoir of his 40-year comedy career is called Laugh Lines, My Life Helping Funny People Be Funnier. We caught up with Alan in his home in New York City via Zoom, so excuse a few of the digital glitches and pops as he recalls a lifetime career in comedy and shares the special reason his stand-up career never took off.
4 months into it, Lorne Michaels saw me, wanted to see a bunch of my jokes, and I typed up what I thought were my best jokes. There were 1,100 of them, and I had my meeting with him because he wanted to talk to me about this new show that would be called Saturday Night Live that would premiere in the fall. So there were two clubs in New York at the time. One was called The Improvisation, and that's where Robert Klein and David Brenner, my friend Larry David, you know, they were coming through those clubs. And the other one was called Catch a Rising Star, and they had the same cast of stand-up comics. Billy Crystal was there more often than he was at The Improv, and that's where he and I met. And so I thought it was our turn, the baby boomer generation, to have our say, because when you think about what SNL was in those beginning years, it was the baby boomer generation talking about what our lives were like, what our political point of view was, what our social mores were. So it was sort of a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned that you met my fellow Canadian, Lorne Michaels, while you were doing, during that four-month period when you were doing stand-up. Tell me about that initial meeting with him.
I typed up 1,100 of my jokes, and he was staying at, if memory serves, at the Plaza Hotel in the city, and I gave him this tome of 1,100 jokes, and he opened it, and he read the first joke, and he just sort of nodded and went, very good. And then he closed the Plaza. But Lorne was incredibly smart. He kept the book. He asked me to tell him a little bit more about myself. And I got a phone call about 2 or 3 days later that I had gotten a job on this brand new show that would, like I said, premiere in the fall.
What was your proudest accomplishment on Saturday
Night
Live?
There were a number of them. I wrote The Samurais for John Belushi. John auditioned for the show with that character. Another writer named Tom Schiller wrote the first Samurai, which was called Samurai Hotel, and it was a hit. And then Lorne, a couple of shows later, Buck Henry was to come in and host. And Lorne said to me, you worked in a delicatessen before you got here, right? And I said, yeah. He said, can you write Samurai Deli? And I went, oh, you bet. And then he walked away. And I'm going, all right, how am I going to do this?
Would it be too much to ask if you could cut it in half? That's absolutely beautiful. Thank you very much. That's terrific. One other thing.
What's your bet?
Do you think you could break a 20?
That was a signature that I had there. And a character that I co-created with Gilda called Roseanne Rosanna Dana. Gilda and I just made each other laugh. A writer named Rosie Schuster had written a sketch called Hire the Incompetent. It was a public service announcement where people who got fired from their jobs because of their incompetence, this was to say, please hire these people, even though they're incompetent. And for Gilda's vignette, she put on a wig and she had a dialect and she was scratching her arms and picking her nose and all of that. It did well. And I had dinner with Gilda a few weeks later, and I was now running the Weekend Update section of the show. And I said, remember that sketch you did? I said, why don't we take that character and move her into update, give her a name, and let her do consumer reports. And she would get a letter every week from a letter writer named Richard Fader from Fort Lee, New Jersey. I would write a letter to her in his name. That's my brother-in-law.
Jersey writes in and says, "Dear Rosanna Dana, last Thursday I quit smoking. Now I'm depressed, I gained weight, my face broke out, I'm nauseous, I'm constipated, my feet swelled, my gums are bleeding, my sinuses are clogged, I got heartburn, I'm cranky, and I have gas. What should I do?" Mr. Fader, you sound like a real attractive guy. You belong in New Jersey.
It became in and of itself something that was ours and mine and Gilda's, I mean. And even after we left the show, we wrote a book that, as if it was written by Rosanna Dana. So, you know, it's like a lot of highlights, but those pop out right away.
Yeah. So you left Saturday Night Live after five seasons, and then you were doing some freelance work. And then a few years after this, you meet Gary Shandling. And one day, Gary, you do some work for him for an HBO special, I believe it was, or Showtime.
But it was actually a Showtime special.
Right.
Not
yes, that's right. But anyway, I was going to say, Alan, one day Gary tells you about this idea for a TV show that he has. What did he say?
Well, we both had the same managers, and my manager called me up and asked me if I knew Gary was. I had seen him on Letterman, thought he was funny. It was like lightning struck a second time. As it had done with Gilda, there was somebody I could write with where we got each other. We could make each other laugh, but our senses of humor were just a little different to make the alchemy something that neither of us could have done alone. After the special was over, during that time, he told me about an idea that he had for a show where he would play himself, Gary Shandling, the comedian who would talk to camera. And I said, "Boy, that's weird." I said, because I had been thinking of a show. I was now married with two children. The husband would be, the father would be a comedy writer who could also talk to camera, as if Dick Van Dyke, the old Dick Van Dyke show, could talk to camera. So they were very similar.
Yeah.
We blended the two ideas together, and we came up with It's Gary Shandling Show. And it was the first cable show ever nominated for an Emmy Award, because prior to that, cable shows were not eligible for Emmy Awards. We had something called the Cable Ace Awards. Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing the show and broke some rules, and that's what Gary and I did together.
Yeah, you broke a lot of rules. I think that's what makes the show hold up so well, and why it's so funny and why it was so influential. It reminds me of that famous Picasso quote: "Every act of creation begins with an act of destruction," and you were destroying all these sitcom tropes.
Well, that's a wonderful application of that quote. I thank you, and that's what we did. Gary knew the sitcom form a little better than I did, because he had written.
Mm-hmm.
I had never written a situation. I had a ill-fated pilot that I had written that was produced and didn't go anywhere. But I was a fan. I grew up on The Honeymooners and the Dick Van Dyke Show and whatever. But Gary and I, when we would write this show, we would say, okay, Three's Company would do it this way. They would dissolve from this scene to that scene. Well, what I had Gary do was we went theatrical. We had him control the narrative of his life. So we took George Burns, we took Jack Benny. He would look at the camera every so often with an aside. So we knew what our roots were, but we blew it up a little bit.
For those of you who've had your head in the sand for the last 2,000 years or have cable, you probably don't know about Mahjong. Mahjong has been around since the Ming Dynasty, where the imperial clan actually played for many, many hours right in the emperor's palace.
Flower.
Flower? Hey, to your flower, I say one white dot. Wish my red dragon could have seen that.
It's an old Mahjong joke.
I was surprised to learn about the origin story of the theme song for It's Gary Shandling Show. Can you tell me about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, that's a perfect example of Gary and I being in total sync. We had left our manager's office, and we're going to the elevator now. This is in L.A. And he says, you know, we're going to need a theme song. And I said, okay, I get it. Anything you have in mind? He said, well, in the spirit of everything else, should we have a theme song about the theme song? And then I looked at him and said, I'm almost halfway finished. How do you like so far? Like the theme to Gary's show. Now we get on the elevator and we're going down. And then Gary goes, this is the theme to Gary's show, the opening theme to Gary's show. This is the music that you hear when you watch the credits. And then I looked at him and I went, I'm almost to the part where I start to whistle. And the elevator gets to the lobby, doors open. Gary looks at me, I look at him, we go, all right, that's the theme.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, that you guys are just so copacetic. That's like a great example of that. As you said, you adapted your novel North into a screenplay for a movie directed by your friend Rob Reiner. It came, well, you knew I was going to ask this, Alan. Come on. It came out in 1994, and Roger Ebert wrote a pretty scathing review of it. What did he say?
Oh, scathing?
Yeah. Is that an understatement? Oddly,
I have the review in the other room in my wallet. I carry it with me. But, you know, look, I had written this novella, a very thin book, about a boy named North, 9 years old, didn't feel appreciated by his parents, declared himself a free agent, went all over the world offering his services as a son to the highest bidding sets of moms and dads. And the book did okay. Okay, it didn't break any records, but I had sent Rob Reiner the galleys because I wanted a blurb for the book cover. Rob had hosted the third Saturday Night Live ever, and we stayed friends. And he called me up and he says, I really like this book. Let's do a movie. Well, I moved the family to LA, and I, you know, it's a writer's dream to write a book and you adapt it into a screenplay. And it became this $45 million movie, Jason Alexander, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Bruce Willis. And I fly my parents out from Florida, and there's a big premiere and greatest night of a writer's life, you know. And then the next morning, the reviews come out. Roger Ebert, I don't have the review in front of me, but I could tell you that there was one paragraph which went like this. I hated this movie. Hated this movie.
Hated every simpering, stupid, vacant, audience-insulting moment of it. Unquote, and so on. Altogether, I used the word hated 10 times. I have to give North credit for one thing, though. When I was preparing for this show, I didn't have to spend a lot of time trying to figure out which was the year's worst movie, so it saved me time.
I really let it get the best of me. I was, I gave him too much power at the time and let it depress me. It let me rethink what I was doing. My wife would come back from the supermarket and, you know, LA's a company town, so the housewives would heckle her.
You know? Oh, dear. That's not nice.
It was a little embarrassing, yeah.
Well, that's not nice. So did you ever run into Roger Ebert after his
review? I always wondered what it would be like. 10 years passed. I had written a book, a novel called The Other Shulman, which was very successful for me. It won the Thurber Prize, and I went all over the country on a book tour. And one stop took me to Chicago, and I was taken out to a restaurant. And now I'm looking at him, and he's wearing a sweater, which was four sizes too big for him. And it had all the autumn colors and burnt orange and browns and puke green. It was all right. Now, he gets up and he starts walking towards the men's room. And as if I was on automatic pilot, because I had no idea what I would do. It was like I wonder what Alan's going to do to Roger Ebert. I excused myself from the table I was at. I followed him into the men's room. Now, we're both in the men's room, and we're washing our hands, and there's that mirror, a It's on the other side of the sink, you know, on the wall. I look into the mirror and I go, Roger. And he looks up and I see he's trying to place me. And I go, Alan Zweibel. And the blood drains from his face. And I said, Roger, I just have to tell you that I hate that sweater you're wearing. And he smiled, I smiled, he started laughing, I started laughing, we shook hands. And that's what happened when I ran into him. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah, and that was the perfect comeback. You came up with the perfect comeback.
Yeah, well, thank God for that sweater, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You've accomplished so much in your comedy career. You helped create two of the most iconic TV series of all time. You've written novels, short stories, screenplays. You won the Thurber Prize for one of your novels. Your work has appeared on Broadway. Is there something that you haven't done yet that you're still itching to do?
A brochure. I've never written a pamphlet. You know, Billy Crystal and I just completed a movie that we co-wrote called Here Today. Billy directed it, and it stars he and Tiffany Haddish. And I'm 70 now. Billy's a couple of years older than me. And I would say to him more than once, look how old we are, and we're still doing this. And we get off on it. Look what we love to do, and we're still being allowed to do it. So I'm going to keep on letting the ideas, as long as they let me do it, as long as there's an audience for it, tell me how the idea wants to best be serviced. How does it want to exist in the world, and go from there?
Alan Zweibel is a comedy writer, screenwriter, and playwright. He's the author of Laugh Lines, My Life, Helping Funny People Be Funnier. The audiobook will be out July 21st. Find out more about Alan and his work at WPR.org/beta. Now's the part where I whistle.
She always encouraged me to write, and she always celebrated even the smallest paragraph-long things that I published. She learned how to use a laptop because most of my writing early in my career was online.
Bess Kolb joins us to talk about her love letter memoir to her grandma, Bobby. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.